From Vermont Public Radio, this is VPR Regional News.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The relationship between the U.S. and Canada is a long-standing friendship, but it's not without occasional tension. There are times that tension is even felt here in Vermont. Last summer, tempers flared when the U.S. Border Patrol considered closing streets that connected the Vermont town of Derby Line with Stanstead, Quebec. Jan-Yves de Rocher, publisher of the weekly Stanstead Journal, did not like the idea.
And what we're being told by the Americans is that basically we're going to put a fence right there. Thank you very much. A pleasure talking to you. I mean, it's not exactly the nicest way of treating a neighbor who is bleeding to death right now, fighting a war in Afghanistan on behalf of the United States.
Strong words and some deep feelings expressed there. So what is the wider status of our relationship with Canada? Well, David Kilgore and David T. Jones have just written a new book on the subject called Uneasy Neighbors, Canada, the USA, and the Dynamics of State, Industry, and Culture. They are joining us today. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Good to be here, Jane.
Jane, it's a pleasure to hear you.
Why, thank you. Now, by way of introduction and in order to identify you, since you are both Davids, David Kilgore, you're the Canadian half of the partnership, and you're based in Ottawa, a former member of Parliament for both the Conservative and Liberal parties. You also served as the Canadian Secretary of State for Latin America and Africa, Secretary of State for Asia Pacific, and Deputy Speaker of the House. That's a long resume. And David Jones, your resume is equally as long. You represent the American side of things. Your home base is Arlington, Virginia. You're a retired U.S. senior foreign officer who focused on NATO and arms control issues, served as the political minister counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Ottawa in the 1990s. And I assume that's when the two of you met in Ottawa and began talking about this sort of push and pull of the relationship between our two countries. How did the idea of this book come about?
Go ahead, David. David T.
Well, I mean, the idea was based on the fact that we saw and worked with each other for an extended period of time, and little by little we came to the conclusion that rather than emphasizing our differences, we should be able to look upon the relationship as one where there were almost the equivalent of alternative North Americas, each of which was attempting to solve some of the great problems of the 21st century in a manner that might be compatible, might be different, but from which each of us could learn.
Well, you mentioned in the book that there are several different ways to look at the current relationship between the U.S. and Canada. One objectionable to some people is that Canada is just U.S. light, that globalization is causing the two countries to adopt pieces of both places and just become one place that has sort of the characteristics of both, or that the two countries are diverging. But you two posit a different idea that the two countries have never really been alike. David Kilgore, can you explain a little bit about that?
Well, yes, it's a long subject. My wife puts it better than anybody. She says that the chief virtue of the book is that it explains how we got to where we each are on a number of key issues. The Stanstead, Quebec issue you started with, I guess we don't deal with, David, explicitly, but as the mayor of Stanstead said, Canadians are actually taking more casualties, deaths of our young people than I think any of the countries there at the moment, and this is something that is causing a lot of grief in Canada, naturally. And so to think that you would build a fence through your Stanstead is something I can assure your listeners that is not good PR, not good for Canada-U.S. relations. But we look at a number of issues, Jane. Democracy, for example, we have a different concept of democracy than you do. Ours was, I think it's fair to say, it was a sort of a top-down from the monarch or the governor-general down, and the people were subjects. Yours, since your War of Independence, I think it's fair to say, has been very much a citizen democracy. We're all citizens, and we don't give too much power to the government, and we have checks and balances and all those kinds of things, which Canada, frankly, does not have. And it's something we're wrestling with, and obviously you're wrestling with now at the as well.
So basically the differences started when America became its own country.
And Canada evolved into its own country, yes, indeed. And we started in different places, and we've, of course, ended up different places, and we're both obviously still evolving.
Well, you also say that our countries have very different approaches to some similar priorities. Democracy, you just mentioned, healthcare, education, defense is a big one. Can you explain why our sort of ideas about these priorities are so different? David Jones?
Sure.
Well, some of the ideas are at least a reflection of the magnitude of our respective countries. It would be very difficult in defense issues, for example, for Canada with a population of 33 million to hold an active role in the in world affairs commensurate to a country that has a population of 300 million and is willing to exercise force commensurate to this size. So some of it is purely a reflection of innate capabilities.
Well, what binds us together? I mean, obviously, we are neighbors. We do have very strong ties. What do you think binds us?
I think the basics go back to the very beginning, that we are indeed both first-world, high-tech, democracy-loving, human rights, promoting rule of law, abiding, free market-practicing societies, and in which there are not all that many of them. And if the world needs more Canada, it also needs more United States of America. So I think that these basics are the ones that from which we start and the ones that will continue to hold us very close.
We'd like to invite our listeners on both sides of the border to join the conversation today. You can call 1-800-639-2211, or you can email us at vermontedition@vpr.net. How do you see the relationship between the U.S. and Canada? Do you think we're in sort of the trough in terms of friendly relations? How do you think the two countries should define our borders, cultures, and laws? Should there be more or less collaboration? Our number again is 1-800-639-2211. And our email is vermontedition@vpr.net. Now, let's talk a little bit about that trough. You say the relationship between Americans and Canadians is pretty sour right now. Why is that?
Well, I can maybe start with that one. I think I saw a poll the other day saying that 20% of Americans approve of George Bush as president. And I think if you asked that question in Canada, you'd probably be very close to zero. It was 11% the last time I saw a poll reported in our media. The fact is that we disagree with Mr. Bush as Canadians on just about everything he does. And let me pick a current example of what's happening in Kenya. We heard in our media, or at least I did, that Mr. Bush had approved the results of those elections in Kenya, which have caused so much bloodshed and chaos and so on now. And I think the word that came to my mind was prudence. Why would he approve the results of those elections so quickly when, in fact, Britain, the European Union, and so on have not now pointed out a number of serious flaws with them? David, I think, made us as an answer on that point. But
I would like to answer perhaps immediately, just so that the issue doesn't get away. As far as I can tell from any review of this point, including checking with the White House correspondence files and press releases, the president never made any such statement. There was, on the 30th of December, which was the Sunday prior to New Year's Eve, a statement made by the Department of State following the response by the Kenya Election Commission that the incumbent president had been reelected. The statement by the Department of State, not Mr. Bush, was that was a pro forma statement to the effect of a congratulatory message and a hope that they would be able to continue to work together. As the as circumstances developed, we reversed that statement and have joined what I would say is the general Western world desire for peace and democratic action within the country of Kenya.
So
it's always possible that there's misunderstanding, but at least I would be mildly willing to forgive somebody on the Sunday before New Year's Day for having taken the word of the Kenyan Election Commission that it was a legitimate election.
But it's clear that even in breaking news, I mean, Canadians are not necessarily looking favorably upon the U.S. government, and any comments they make, they may not be as willing to forgive. Do you think that this is all just a matter of politics and the dynamic is going to change as soon as there's a new president and suddenly Americans and Canadians will be holding hands again?
No, I don't think that's particularly likely. I'll use a throwaway line and say that nobody loves Goliath. But Goliath always looks pretty silly when he starts whining about not being loved. And no, I do not think that regardless of who was elected, there would be an instant turnaround, because many of the decisions are based that we are facing, and many of the problems that we're facing are problems that will equally conflict the new president, regardless of what party he or she is from.
David Kilgore, do you agree?
Well, Jane, I'm assured that none of your listeners in Iowa can hear what we're saying. And of course, the last thing a Canadian would want to do is influence the Iowa caucuses. But I must say, as you know and your listeners know, that Barack Obama, having lived in Kenya, and I'm showing my bias, of course, but I think that he, as president, would change your image in Africa and, I think, Asia. I just had coffee with an ambassador from an Asian country. I think he would do more to change this terribly negative impression that Mr. Bush has created, and not just in Canada, but around the world, than just about anybody. Now, I'm sure half your listeners will say, well, no, but Hillary Clinton would do better, but maybe I better leave it at that.
But at any rate, a change in politics might help.
Yes.
Well, let's take a call from Keese, who's calling from Weston. Hi, Keese.
Hi. I just wanted to ask if this whole difference between the way Canadians and Americans are is much more of a kind of scale of gray. I mean, having grown up in Western Vermont, and I watch CBC just as whenever there's nothing on the rest of the channels, just as much as I watch ABC or something, and I feel that for us Americans in the northern states that border Canada, Canada isn't so different from us as compared to, say, Florida is from us, and that there's really more of a connection with our border neighbors up above us than there is to states in the deep south. And I was wondering if your speakers could speak to that at all.
Keese, good point. I mean, yeah, most Canadians live within 100 miles of the U.S. border, but millions of Americans live very far away. What about people in places like Vermont? Are we more similar to Canadians?
Well, David, have a go.
Never having lived in Vermont, that would be a little difficult to tell. But, I mean, certainly on sheer geographic and economic aspects of it, the connectivity between the United States and Canada is greater on a north-south level than on an east-west level. And you can go across the Canada-U.S. Continental area and say that originally the difference between a Canadian and an American might have been the difference between an immigrant who turned left versus turning right while going across the continent. And indeed, the economic connectivity across the continent is very high. I think these are the basic connections, the basic elements of the relationship that make the throwaway line of an undefended border into a socio-political economic reality. But that doesn't mean that the differences between Americans and Canadians are not deep and significant, and read on Easy Neighbors to get the full insights of that regard.
Today we're taking a broad look at the relationship between the U.S. and our neighbor to the north, Canada. We share more than just our 5,525-mile-long border, but our relationship isn't always sweetness and light. Our guests today have written a new book about the bond between the two countries called Uneasy Neighbors, David T. Jones and David Kilgore. And whichever side of the border you're listening on, we'd like to hear how you would characterize your neighbor. Our number is 1-800-639-2211, and our email is vermontedition@vpr.net. Would you like to see a stronger relationship between the two countries? How do you think our priorities differ? Do you think that as individuals, Canadians and Americans have a different relationship with each other than our governments do? The number to call is 1-800-639-2211, and our email is vermontedition@vpr.net. Now, David Kilgore and David Jones, obviously you two are individuals, and I was curious in reading your book to ask you if you ever found yourselves sort of arguing on opposite sides of the cultural divide, sort of representing your own country. I mean, David Jones, did you ever want to say to David Kilgore, that's such a Canadian way of thinking about it?
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
My diplomatic approach was always to stress the policy of the government of the United States as I presented it, and also to be very careful about making no comments about the political activity of various Canadian politicians or to express any preference between them.
Well, now, David, you did quote our former ambassador, Frank McKenna, in the U.S. as saying that his statement about the U.S. Congress was like having, was it 435 Carolyn Parishes? Your listeners probably know that Carolyn Parish was a free
agent. But I was no longer a diplomat at that point, because diplomat does not have to be spelled D-O-O-R-M-A-T.
So I see there are, you know, some differences coming out here.
Oh, there are lots of differences.
Did you argue like that when you were writing?
David and I have enjoyed each other's relationship for 15 years, based, as you will recall from the book, among other things, that we both had twin daughters, and we have both have absolutely brilliant professional wives.
He's buttering up to both of our wives there, James.
A wise thing to do, I'm sure. Now, let's take a call from Bob. He's calling from Lebanon, New Hampshire. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi, you have a question?
Thank you. No, well, actually, I don't. I have more of a comment, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
I've been to Canada many times. I've been to Victoria on Vancouver Island, and I've been to St. John, Newfoundland, and places in between, not all at the same time, of course. And, you know, I've been to Europe, and I always thought when I was in Canada that I never really thought that I was in a foreign country. The sameness to me, I felt I belonged there in a sense. And sometimes I think the differences really are overemphasized.
Well, Bobby, if I may, you've encountered Canadian politeness, because we are very polite people, as I'm sure you know, and maybe too polite at times. And the people you met, probably, if you had asked them a direct question, would have explained some of the differences. But the last thing you want to say to a Canadian, as you know, and we've heard of this a number of times in the book, is that you're just like us. Of course, we're all people, and we all have the same needs and goals and so on, but we're not just like us. And in fact, I tell the story. Have I got Jane very quickly to tell
it?
Sure,
sure.
It's an anecdote about when God was creating the world, he gave beautiful mountains and rivers and hardworking people and diversity and so on to Canadians, and somebody looked at him and said, "Why are you giving all these things to Canada?" And God replied, "Wait till you see the neighbor I'm giving them." And there's a lot of truth in that. We Canadians are they say we're like Europeans, but more than Americans. And I don't know whether David Jones would want to make a comment on that.
Well, the throwaway line has been that we're best friends, like it or not. And unfortunately, we are somewhat in the not portion of that cycle at this moment. Mm-hmm. That traditionally, you can say in political terms, Canadian politicians stand something like two steps to the left of American politicians, and that the Canadian liberals would like to have a relationship with the United States that is as bad as possible without prompting us into taking sanctions measures against them, while the conservative government would like to have as good a possible relationship with the United States as possible without it causing them to lose the next election.
Well, Bob, I want to ask you a question before we let you go. Do you think that the differences are so slight that maybe we should have even more relaxed borders, maybe we should have a better relationship than we do with Canada?
Well, I'm not too sure we should put fences up. I think perhaps we should have politically better relationships, but I don't know. I think things come and go. I think our relationships sometimes are low. Our feelings for each other are low, and maybe this is one of the low points. But I'm very optimistic about it. I was in Scotland a few years ago, and I was staying at the same bed and breakfast with a group of people from Canada, and I said to someone, "Well, I'm an American," and the people from Canada said, "We're Americans too."
Mm.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
That is interesting.
Well, no, they meant North Americans, of course, but I found that very interesting.
Bob, can I jump in one more time?
Sure.
I landed at Dulles Airport
a
couple of weeks ago with I don't know how many planes. Ours was coming from Europe, and I'm kid you not, it took us 2 hours to get through the customs there, and what really hurt was that you had separate lineups for the American citizens and then another set of lineups for the non-Americans, and the Americans were all through, and there must have been 300 of us still in line for the non-Americans. And there were, I think, 6 out of the 12 immigration officer wickets were closed. Now, you know, you can say that's just a small incident, but you can imagine we were all trying to catch other planes, and I'm sure most of us missed them. This kind of thing just causes us to, you know, pull our hair out. Why can't you at least run your immigration offices at Dulles airports? And I suspect that's not the only example I could give you.
You know, we have a lot of callers anxious to get into the conversation. Let's go to one right now. We have Michelle calling from Norwich. Hi, Michelle.
Hello, this is Professor Michel Cabé, and you can tell from the pronunciation of the name, I was Canadian.
But no longer?
No, I became an American citizen in 2005 so that I could speak freely without being arrested, thrown out of the country, and refused entry for speaking my mind politically. I had a specific topic that I thought perhaps your fascinating guests might like to address. Do you remember Sunbelt Water Incorporated versus the Crown?
No.
Oh, really? Well, Sunbelt.
I have a vague recollection that this was associated with whether
water.
Whether you gave correct, whether you gave comparable rights to different companies.
A violation of NAFTA, according to the company. It still hasn't been resolved. Dates back many years now. It dates back all the way into the early 1990s when an American company called Sunbelt Water Incorporated began negotiating for the right to cooperate with a Canadian company in British Columbia. British Columbia, for American listeners, is one of the provinces. A province is like a state in that large blank area that's pink on the map, north of the, you know, there actually is a country there, yes. The British Columbia government found out about the deal, which would have exported massive quantities of water, and stopped it.
Hey, Michelle, this case you mentioned is still ongoing. What do you think that this says about the relationship between the U.S. and Canada?
Very litigious.
Litigious indeed. I looked for and could not find the recent speech about 6 months ago. I cannot give the specifics. I haven't been able to re-find the reference. A state legislator in a northern tier state, and I'm afraid I won't give any more details. I don't remember for sure. But I do remember what he said. He said, "The Canadians have prevented American companies from taking the water which is our due from Canada, and I think it will be the manifest destiny of America to take over control of the Canadian landmass."
Well, one foolish person. I don't think we should waste time on one foolish person's comments.
I think that's absurd, and I don't think you would find anybody with a legitimate political position in the United States making that kind of a statement.
Well, I do want to bring up something that Michelle raised, which is, as you said, the litigiousness of our two societies. And one place that often happens is in some of our bilateral free trade agreements. I mean, there's tension in this partnership as well. You think about softwood lumber, beef exports, and this is only a very small portion of our trade deals. Most of them, as you mentioned in the book, go by unnoticed, 95%. It's a $2 billion a day exchange. So why do we pay so much attention to the deals on the border that don't go well?
Well said, Jane. I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, the point is that controversy makes news.
Well, yes, that is very true. Let's talk to Doug in Rutland. Hi, Doug.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling about crossing the border and why it takes so interminably long. And I just had my wife and I like to go to, we live in Vermont, we live in Rutland, and we like to go up to Montreal a lot, specifically because it is a different culture. It does feel, in a French-speaking environment, it does seem like being in a foreign country. It's a nice break.
You are in a foreign country.
Yeah. No, I understand.
And you can feel some of those differences, is what you're saying, right, Doug?
Yes, you can, and the language is just, you know, one of the manifestations. However, it's become such a drag to cross the border, largely, I think, because the U.S. immigration authority is in funding, you know, that, as you said about Dulles, when we came back from Montreal last week, I think there are 7 or 8 possible lanes open, and they only had 3 of them, plus one for trucks, and we waited online for 1 hour and 20 minutes. It's crazy.
So that is certainly something that Vermonters and Canadians have talked a lot about, especially on Vermont Public Radio. We've talked about it many times. It's certainly something that hasn't changed yet in terms of the anger that it's causing on both sides of the border. David Jones and David Kilgore, I wanted to ask you before we ended this segment if you think that the U.S. and Canada really need each other.
Well, we certainly need you, and I think you certainly need us. I never have been able to get a figure as to how many Canadian livelihoods depend upon your being there, but it's an awful lot. It's millions and millions of our people depend on that, and I think an awful lot of Americans depend on our market as well.
So this is a relationship that we both need, you think?
Yep.
And David Jones?
I think by definition it is so. It is certainly a situation in which the United States has a great desire for a strong and united Canada, and as a longtime friend, ally, and partner.
Well, David Kilgore and David Jones, I want to thank you both for coming on the program and illuminating this cross-border relationship. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having us, Jane. Bye for now.
And our pleasure. Thank you very much, Jane.
David Kilgore is based in Ottawa. He's a former MP for both the Conservative and Liberal parties. He's also served as the Secretary of State for Latin America and Africa, Secretary of State for Asia Pacific, and Deputy Secretary of the House. And David T. Jones is based in Arlington, Virginia. He's a retired U.S. Foreign Service officer focusing on NATO and arms control issues. He served as the political minister at the U.S. Embassy in Ottawa from 1992 to 1996. Their book is called Uneasy Neighbors.
How many 3-cent stamps are in a dozen? If a farmer has 10 sheep and all but 8 die, how many are left? How long is the BBC News Hour on VPR? For a fresh perspective on world events and no trick questions, listen to the BBC News Hour weekday mornings at 9. You'll hear questions that matter and in-depth answers. Give your brain a real workout. Listen to the BBC News Hour weekdays at 9 following Morning Edition on VPR.
Every weekday at noon, VPR's Vermont Edition goes behind the news and dives into what makes this region unique. Make it your source. Learn more at vpr.net. This podcast is made possible by VPR and its listeners.